Welcome to the Optimal Training Podcast, brought to you by Optimal Performance Training Center. And now, your hosts, Eric Schroeder and Thomas Bowes.
Hey, welcome to the OTP, episode number 15. Today we have Alyssa, and Alyssa is involved in fascial stretch therapy. She's also training for the Olympic trials. She's running a crazy amount of miles a week, and she's a very busy person. We're going to dive into what she's got for us today. Alyssa, welcome.
Thanks. So happy to be here. Yeah. Good to meet you guys.
Yeah, this is fun. I mean, we haven't done a podcast in, it's probably been like close to a month. So.
Oh my gosh.
We used to rip them off, try to like at least like every week. But we were waiting. I know, like, we tried to connect earlier, and for whatever reason, I think we got busy. Like, I almost forgot about it. Yeah, and then
same.
I think you as well. Yeah.
Life is just different right now.
Yeah, for sure. But super glad to have you on. This is interesting because this is something, I mean, I have no experience with. I know Eric probably has no experience with. So anytime we can get somebody in here that has, like, a new perspective for anything, like, I'm always super eager to learn about that. So
great.
I guess we can start. We talked a little bit off the mic, but, like, just a little bit of your background, whether it's athletically, you know, like, professionally, however you want to kind of introduce yourself to the listeners. Why don't you go ahead and do that?
Great. So I've been a runner for the past probably 14 years. That's my background. I ran track and field cross country in both high school and college, been around the Grand Rapids area for almost my entire life. After I ran, like, competitively in college, I really kind of didn't want to stop. Mm-hmm. Didn't want to let that go. So I've been training on my own since then. Haven't really run with a team or with like a brand or anything, but I've been kind of racing in the local, like, community. Mm-hmm. I've done a couple larger races outside of the state. Currently trying to qualify, like you said, for the Olympic Trials Marathon, which is the next chance to qualify will be in 4 years. So just kind of looking forward and training long term.
How does that feel? Like, that's a long way away.
Mentally, it's a long stretch. I actually attempted to qualify for this cycle, and I was just a few minutes off. Really didn't give myself enough time to, like, get through a good full training cycle for a marathon. Mm. So in 4 years, I'll be smarter and stronger and ready to go again. So just about the long term game, just being patient. Mm-hmm. So still trying to do that. I've coached at a few different area high schools, track and field and cross country. Currently coaching at Forest Hills Eastern High School, mm-hmm. Track and field and cross country. So trying to get through runs with masks right now.
Been fun. I didn't hear about that.
The order, I guess, just got lifted yesterday, but for a few days, at least for cross country.
Okay.
Not for some other sports, for cross country.
Cross country is like, it does not make sense.
No.
It's about as spread out as you gotta be.
That's kind of my background. I've gotten into a little bit of personal training. I've coached boxing for the past couple of years.
Is that a title boxing?
So it's, I do a lot of things.
Yeah, you got a lot going on.
I like to be busy. I'm a pretty high energy person. So, recently I've gotten into fascial stretch therapy. We'll talk again more about that. But I found that to be a super important modality for my own training and for a lot of the athletes I work with. So,
Cool. Yeah, that's a great intro. You mentioned college, but I don't think you mentioned what you were racing in college.
Yeah, so I attended Calvin College. I competed mostly in the steeplechase.
Okay.
Which is, if you don't know, it's 7 laps around the track, 1 water barrier to jump over each lap, and then 7 other hurdles to get over. So I was All-American in that event for twice. So.
Holy smokes.
Yeah,
Calvin is their
Division 3. Yep. Division
3. Is that like almost, because 8 laps would be 2 miles, right? So it's
3K, like a 3K, right? Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. It's a fun event. It's fun to watch people fall, too.
Yeah.
So you always get people congregating by the water pit and kind of just ogling. So super fun.
Now, did you do, I mean, they don't have that in high school, do they?
No, only in, like, New York and California.
Okay. So were you always, like, longer to middle distance track runner in high school?
Yeah, and I guess, to me, it's, you know, running on the track isn't always very exciting. So to be able to throw in some, like, hurdles and water pits, bring it on, please.
And those hurdles are serious. Like, you cannot miss a hurdle.
They're not the kind they're not the kind that kind of bounce back when you go over them. They're the kind that are, like, solid. Mm-hmm. If you hit one, you're down. Oh, so, fun to
it's
watch,
super
like
fun.
I said.
That's cool.
Definitely the most exciting track event, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So.
So we talked a little bit off mic about your Olympic trials training. You're doing like 80-ish miles a week.
And yeah, kind of coming up and down. My peak weeks have been around 80, coming down to maybe, you know, 60 on some recovery weeks. I just took 2 weeks down at like 30. I was out of the country. So just kind of took 2 weeks off. I hadn't taken time off since my last marathon, which was like in February. So it was time for just a couple weeks of break. Yeah. So trying to start building back up again, and don't really know what race is on the calendar because nothing is really happening right now. So just trying to stay motivated and focused without having that like goal race in a couple months. So we're working through it.
Yeah. I mean, part of it, like what jumps out to me is like, I have no idea how to would even go about programming for like distance training or even endurance training, because that's like that's a whole energy system like we don't never have to tap into here, fortunately. I don't know. I've done like longer runs in the past. A few years ago, I mean, the most mileage I ever got to was like maybe 35 a week,
which is substantial.
It was a lot.
Yeah,
I mean,
like
it was
more than your average, right?
But I was pairing that with like swimming as well. So it was like I was swimming probably 10 miles a week and then like running 35 a week,
which is great. Yeah, a lot of people's bodies.
It was intense.
Adding the swimming, it's like we have a lot of kids that, you know, you hit 55 miles and all of a sudden their bodies start to respond well. So yeah, that extra swimming or extra biking is super important.
Anything you can kind of chop up. But I mean, for you, I mean, and you don't have to go, you can go as detailed as you want, but like training for that, what does that look like? I know because you mix in like resistance training as well. Yeah. Like how do you like structure, I guess, a week, a month? Like,
that's a great question. So my average week when I'm working out well and hard, I'm trying to hit around 80 miles a week. I'll definitely do some two-a-days.
Okay.
So that will look like kind of a harder workout in the morning, and then just kind of some really, really, really easy recovery miles at night. So a typical week would maybe be, we'll do a long run once a week, which I like to take it kind of a more tempo pace. I'll try and like hit, you know, low sixes for the whole, you know, 14-mile run. So kind of do an up-tempo long run, a couple recovery days, which end up being like, I don't know, 9 to 10 miles, and then an easy run at night still. So even those recovery days are still pretty long, distance heavy. Again, if you're trying to hit 80, you're not going to have any day that's short.
Right.
And then again, depending on whether I'm training for something more track-oriented or more like marathon-oriented, the workouts look totally different, obviously. If I'm training for something more track-oriented, maybe we'll do, you know, some 200s, 400s, maybe up to like 1K repeats on the track. If I'm training for something marathon related, it's a lot of like at pace work, longer repetitions, maybe, you know, 2 miles at marathon pace, you know, half a mile off, 2 miles at marathon pace, half a mile off, just trying to simulate what that'll
the
feel like.
Yeah
exactly. With a little bit of break, obviously. To hit Olympic trials qualifying, you have to be able to run 26.2 miles at 6:15 pace. So that's the ultimate goal.
And what's the time? What's the time on that?
It's a 2:45 marathon.
Wow.
Yeah.
That
that's just the, like the B standard. The A standard, I think, is somewhere in the 2:30s or.
And A is A is automatic, and B is like.
Yeah. So basically, they'll pay your way. They'll cover all your stay, your hotel. B, you have to pay your own way. But actually last year, the Atlanta Track Club, that's where the trials were held, they paved the way for everyone. So kind of cool. Kind of ended up being the A and B were just kind of the same.
How far, you said you were a few minutes off, how far, what was the last time you tried to qualify?
Yeah, so I tried twice. I tried in Richmond, Virginia in November, and then I tried in Houston, Texas in January. Both times I ran like almost the exact same time. I ran like a 2:52. So a good 7 minutes to go. But again, my training cycle, I started training, I decided I wanted to try in about August.
Whoa.
So I gave myself like 3 months. So I need to give myself like a couple of years, which is exactly what I'll be able to do now. I know I can do it. I like those experiences were pretty solid. I just didn't quite have what I needed at the end of those miles, which is the most difficult part, obviously. So.
Well, I'm sure that was heartbreaking initially, but like it gave you confidence.
Oh yeah,
right?
No, I don't think I'm ever going to be a lifelong marathoner. Like it's not my favorite distance. It's just long and super painful.
Yeah.
So I really want to try and get to trials, just kind of have that on my, like, it's on my bucket list kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And
sure.
then maybe never run a marathon ever again. So just stick with the shorter distances, the 5K, you know, half marathon is even, like, really great, pretty sustainable, easier recovery.
Yeah.
Yeah, and actually I haven't, when I was doing my training for the marathons, I wasn't doing fascial stretch therapy at all, so I'm kind of interested to integrate that into my training for the next cycle.
That would
so,
be very interesting, because that's pretty new, isn't it? You said within the past, what,
half a year,
6 months,
Yep, it's pretty new.
Okay.
Have you seen a difference in time specifically, or just maybe how you feel? Or?
That's such a great question. This spring is kind of when I started the whole, like, integration with fascial stretch therapy. I also, at the same time, I had a former athlete I used to coach. Her name's Jamie Reed. She runs at the University of Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
She was back in town because their whole outdoor track season was canceled. Their school was canceled, all that.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually was able to train with her this spring and kind of beginning of summer. And it was probably the hardest period of training I've ever done. And definitely, I could PR in several events. And so I know I was working harder and training harder, but also integrating fascial stretch therapy. So I'm sure it was kind of a marriage of the two.
Sure.
You know, I'd like to think it was a little bit of both.
Yeah.
So yeah, I definitely think I've seen some, like, performance benefits, and yeah, it's been fun.
Have you also been, like, apart from the marathon, it sounds like you've been, I mean, you compete in, like, not, would it be a master's event? Are you master's track now, or how does that work? Or
no, it's really, that's the thing, there's not a lot of post-collegiate athletes that compete in track and field,
right,
unless they do it, you know, at a professional level after college. So most most collegiate track and field meets will accept just kind of unattached runners.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah, so that's kind of what ends up happening. I've really haven't done a lot of track racing post-college. I'm really looking forward to getting into it again.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so basically it would be like, you know, Grand Valley's hosting a, you know, a meet, and you can sign up for the steeplechase, or U of M's hosting a meet. Most events or most track meets will accept unattached runners.
Okay.
So that's kind of how
ones.
That works.
Yeah,
gotcha.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, anything that's not conference, mostly just invitationals.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it works.
Yeah, for sure. What about, so are you doing, like, you said more tempoed out paces, stuff like that. Is that more, like, heart rate driven? Are you, like, a big heart rate person? Or are you
like
a pace time person?
Yeah, so I mean, I definitely run with a watch that has a heart rate monitor.
Mm-hmm.
I should definitely pay attention to it more than I do. Yeah, most of the time it's me going through after the run and being like, oof, that was a rough one.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I just kind of base, we have a couple different, like, Jack Daniels pace charts.
Mm-hmm.
We use those, kind of calculate what certain rep patients should be. So we, again, use those. Definitely more pace driven and heart rate driven.
Sure.
I would definitely love to get more into that side of things. But right now it's more of an after the fact. I look at it and it's, oh my gosh.
Yeah. Probably gonna
something
down,
was off today.
Yeah.
Yeah, or kind of use it to monitor how well I'm recovering.
Yeah, 100%.
That's always more interesting to me. Just kind of average resting heart rate.
Mm-hmm.
Can tell if I'm in, like, a harder period of training or if I've tapered well. Or,
okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's your typical
average resting heart rate?
This is interesting.
High 40s.
Wow.
Holy smokes.
I think
that's what I sleep at.
That's what 80 miles a week will do to you.
Yeah.
Holy smokes.
If I'm in the right time, if I'm recovered well.
Yeah.
So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, what kind of, do you wear, like, a certain wearable for that? Like, do you have, is it just, like, an Apple Watch? Is it?
Yeah, I just use a Garmin.
Okay,
yeah,
Garmin.
Garmin Forerunner 35 or something.
Okay.
Something like
very
that.
Cool.
Right now it's getting fixed, so I just feel naked.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So you don't know what's going on with my
body.
Give
me my data. No, I'm the same way.
Really scary.
Yeah. All right, it's probably up and down.
Yeah, I just don't know.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
Let's jump into fascial stretch therapy.
I'm ready.
Of course. Yeah, so, I mean, I'll just kind of start, and you guys can, I mean, ask me any questions, things I don't cover. So, I guess starting with what is fascia, I feel like a lot of people don't know
what your
fascia is.
Really, yeah, really good point.
So, yeah, it's like this, in a kind of a basic way of describing it, it's this, you know, network of tissues that connects all of your joints, all of your joint capsules, all of your muscles, everything in your entire body. It goes from your toes to your forehead.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to be this, like, really, like, gliding, soft, malleable, you know, substance in your body. But oftentimes with injury, with age, with, you know, really repetitive movements that you do when you train for any sport, it becomes kind of like sticky or hard. And so that fascial release, what we do with fascial stretch therapy, allows it to be really, again, gliding and smooth. And that's what allows like your tissues and your muscle and your joint capsules to like work smoothly and work together. If you have, if you have any like hiccups in that, if you have something, you know, tight, like, you know, constrained in your calf, it's going to affect everything else throughout the rest of your body. You know, your whole body needs to be in, you know, sync to have everything work well together. That's, that's kind of what, we work on. It's, so just kind of the glue that holds the body together. And then that, when it's upset, it can cause inflammation, it can cause irritation. So fascial release is what breaks up all those adhesions in your body. So that's kind of like what it's based in. What we do, fascial stretch therapy, it's table-based. So we'll have you, you know, lay on your back on kind of like a massage table. There's a few, there's like one strap that goes over, we kind of stretch one side of the body at a time. So there's one strap that we put kind of over your calf, one strap that we put over like your thigh muscle. And then we kind of work from there. It's, again, there's lots of things that it, it can be for, you know, people who sit at a desk all day and need to be, you know, moving better. It can be for people with bad posture. It can be for people who are trying to rehab from injuries, from surgeries. Again, my line of work, I really like to use it for athletes. It's developed by a woman who lives in Arizona. Her name's Ann Frederick. She kind of pioneered the whole thing. She's a, an Olympic, she works a lot of Olympic athletes on their flexibility, a lot of professional athletes on their flexibility. So yeah, it's around the country, it's around the world, but yeah, there's not really a spot in Michigan that does it in like a large like group setting. So yeah, I work at Helix Performance, or not Helix Performance Center, sorry, Helix Stretch Center. We're in Cascade, Michigan. It was started by Becky White Steensma. She's been in the industry for 22 years as a personal trainer and then as a fascial stretch therapist. We currently have 8 fascial stretch therapists that work there. We offer cupping, massage, and then fascial stretch therapy. And yeah, it's been kind of a fun thing to be a part of in the last half a year.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. I mean, I have so many questions already.
I know, I feel like I just kind of like vomited.
That was perfect. Okay. I think I'd like to try to deep dive just a little more on like fascia, if we can go there. I would say, I was listening to something the other day on a podcast. They were kind of talking more about, now, I don't know if you know about this, but like fascia and its like response to like emotion. Have they touched on that? It's they related it to like how like horses are like kind of emotionally heightened. You know, they freak out if like a storm's coming, stuff like that. It's like they're so switched on because their fascia is so efficient. And I heard that. I'm like, that's interesting because, I mean, if you have any like relation to that or you have any more information on that, I'd love to hear more about that.
Yeah, and I'll say there's certain points in the fascia where like during a stretch session, again, it's almost something you have to experience to totally understand. Yeah, like a lot of times like they say like your emotion is kind of held in your fascia and the way it connects to your brain, the way it connects to your muscles. Again, everything is just a web and it transmits emotion. It transmits energy. Again, I don't know the science behind it. Again, there's people that could probably talk circles around me in terms of the science, but that's definitely something that's part of the fascia that it's connected to everything. So I agree with you there.
I think that's why they say acupuncture works so well. Because like you're like almost like releasing like top poking holes in the tightness and like, I don't know, releasing energy or like emotion through dry needling or whatever the case is. But no, and I know there's a book about that called Anatomy Trains, and that's all about how like your fascial slings work and like cross-section patterns and stuff like that. I haven't read the book myself, but I've had a few friends recommend it. But I mean, and like, that's just so interesting to me because like in a holistic aspect, like you don't think of like your connective tissue, holding emotion. It's just like your body, but
again, people just don't think of it in general. You just think you have your muscles and your bones, and that's it. But this is something that encapsulates all those things. Or people even think, you know, obviously you get sore muscles, you get tense muscles, but sometimes more even than like a muscular problem, it's like your fascia being tight around those muscles that causes that stress or that reaction. So it's
hard to tell, right?
Yeah, it's just something that people don't really at least I'm just speaking for myself, before I kind of learned this modality, I had no idea that fascia was even a thing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's mm-hmm. yeah, just interesting. Or even, I mean, I've read different pieces about how, you know, you'll be, if you're going into, you know, medicine or something in the, like, you know, doing a dissection.
Yeah.
A lot of times, like, the fascia will just kind of be, like, scooped out and thrown yep, away in yep. a bucket and not studied. And there's just so much in there that's, like, really interesting. Yep. Not just the muscle, not just the bones, so.
Yeah, and, like, with the C-section delivery for yeah. a pregnant woman, like, they're cutting into that layer. And, like you said, it's tied to emotion.
Yeah.
A lot of times they'll stitch you up, and then a woman can be very emotional after. And it's, like,
I wonder why.
Yeah.
Weird how that works. Yeah. Super interesting.
Yeah.
That is cool. Yeah. So then maybe let's go into kind of how you've started to use that for yourself and others yeah. and kind of, I know it's, you're still new to it, but like any results or like even just like kind of like speculations you think that's going to like how this totally. Is going to transfer to performance.
Totally. So, I kind of got interested in fascial stretch therapy. So I coached, an athlete for 4 years. He's graduated now, but, he started to go see, Becky at Helix, and would get fascial stretch therapy, I think, once or twice a week. And this kid was a good athlete, like, great athlete, hard worker, but was, I mean, it always was kind of like in our varsity group mm-hmm. of the kids I coached in cross country, but never like, really excelled or hit his potential. And then I think once he started seeing Becky to have fascial stretch therapy done a couple of times a week, we really saw like a huge change in his performance. Mm-hmm. By the end of the season, he went from being kind of, you know, middle of the pack of our team to like being almost our front runner. He finished all state, something he'd never done before and never thought was possible. So that just kind of piqued my interest a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, if something like that happens to a kid, you know, you wonder why. Mm-hmm. And hopefully it's just good coaching too.
Yeah, but right.
There was a little more than that, I think. So got into fascial stretch therapy that way. I've yet to really be on a consistent fascial stretch like regimen.
Okay.
Right now I'm doing a lot of stretching, but I think it's oftentimes hard to like stop and actually be like, oh, can I have a stretch, you know?
Yeah.
That's difficult.
When you're working there, you mean?
Yeah. So I think once I kind of get into like a really serious training cycle again mm-hmm. and start racing again once races started happening, mm-hmm. I think I'd like to kind of do a little bit more of that myself. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it's in terms of like athletic performance, it's great for rehab. It's like mm-hmm. if you have an injury or old surgery, old scars, scar tissue, mm-hmm. That fascial release is going to help to break up that scar tissue and hopefully over time lead to, you know, better movement of that body part or wherever the injury happened. Mm-hmm. It's also great for recovery. It's like, you know, I do a hard fartlek run or something and, you know, go get stretched the next day. I found that helps my muscles recover a lot better. Again, just a really simple way to put it. You know, you bring in the good blood, flush out the bad yeah. blood, get things moving. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's been really helpful as well. I just feel like I have faster recovery time whenever I get stretched. Mm-hmm. And then even just with sports performance, it's going to help athletes with their range of motion, help them to hold their bodies better, their posture better. In terms of like my running, I feel like it's helped me with, I used to be a big overstrider, you know, land on my heel and that mm-hmm. just stops all your energy. Mm-hmm. I feel like now I'm able to run a little bit taller, land on my midfoot instead of on my heel. Mm-hmm. I just feel like whenever I've been in a, like a pattern of like good stretching, good fascial stretching, things work better, things move better, things glide better. Mm-hmm. So again, that's just speaking as a distance runner. But again, I know, again, the woman that, you know, pioneered this whole fascial stretch movement. Again, works with like numerous NFL athletes, has worked mm-hmm. with numerous Olympians. There's a lot of people that swear by it. Mm-hmm. So again, I found it to be super interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like for recovery, I think it would be like one-to-one fascial stretch therapy mm-hmm. for a distance runner.
Yeah.
But for a sprinter, like your performance is directly tied into how yeah. much.
No, I mean, like, there's a statistic. It's consistent FST, like, you know, going once or twice a week, is found to improve your force and power by 2 to 5%, mm-hmm. Which improves your running speed by 0.06 seconds over 50 yards, which sounds like nothing.
That's huge.
But that can be, like, for an Olympic runner, for a high-level athlete, that can be the difference between, like, a gold medal and, like, not qualifying for finals.
Yeah.
You know, that 0.06 is everything. So, again, it sounds so minuscule, but, like, it's a big difference.
Yeah.
Huge difference.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, they talked about that in one of Charlie Francis' books, the old sprint coach from Canada. He, like they say, like your neurological output is like just through massage. I mean, and I know it's not the same, but like
similar though, yeah.
Yeah, like you're like able to like increase your uptake like almost like 40% of like your neurological output. So that's like that's massive.
Yeah.
And like I know for sprinting, like that is such a huge piece. Is like passive stretching.
Yeah.
Whether they know they're doing passive stretching or not, they might be like hitting some parts of it on accident, or maybe it's just like that massage piece. Like I think like. That's something, right? Like, we don't perform at a high level, but, like, so we never go do stuff like that. But, like, there's a time I was getting a massage, like, once a week, and, like, I don't think I've ever felt or performed better in my life.
Again, if that's, like, if that's your, like, life's work, if you're, you know, an Olympic sprinter.
Yeah.
Like, literally anything you can do to have that edge.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you do it. Like, anything.
Yeah, and a hundredth is, like, worth, like, X amount of dollars to like somebody like that, and like they'll pay to get it. Like,
oh, that's, heavens, yes. Yeah. You know, yeah. And it's definitely it's different too than I can't remember if I touched on this before we started recording or not, but yeah, very different than like a static stretch.
Yeah, you know, that was my next question. It's like so like people are hearing stretching, they're probably thinking like, all right, like cross your legs, touch your toes, 30 seconds.
Yeah, count, exactly. Like, again, as a cross country and track and field coach, we've you know always kind of you know harped on our kids that. Especially before running, that static stretching almost like decreases your power and your force into the ground. Like it's not a great thing to do. Again, stretch after your run, but you know, not before your run. We do a lot of like dynamics, active warm ups, like most other sports do. So I guess there's kind of like a demonstration we do just to help people understand what fascial stretch is a little better. So again. This is a podcast, you won't be able to see it, but I'll try and demonstrate, I'll try and talk through what I'm doing.
Yeah.
So I just have a finger holding it straight up. So self-stretch, like a static stretch, you're just going to bend that finger back, and that's about like the whole range of motion you're going to get. So my finger's bent back like very minimally.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't do much.
Degrees, yeah.
Come on, so Thomas, let's do see. It. Yeah. Well, I'll hold our fingers
mine
up.
Mine doesn't even bend back.
If you want to do it at home, you can do it at home. So yeah, just holding your finger back, and you're bending it back. Without using any aid. So that's a self-stretch. That's like a static stretch.
Uh-huh.
Next up would be like a stretch that like an average, you know, athletic trainer could help you achieve. And they're just going to kind of push back on your finger. So you definitely get a better range of motion there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like huge difference. I'm just taking another finger, pushing back on the other finger, and you definitely get some benefit there. The difference, what we do at Helix, what we do with fascial stretch therapy, is we're going to traction at the joint. So that's going to look like this. We're going to grab our finger, and you're going to pull it up, traction at the joint, and then you're going to bend it back, and you see what a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, you're going to create some space in that joint capsule. That's really, I think, one of, like, the three tools we use is self-traction would be one.
Okay.
Again, we're going to just, like, create some space in that joint capsule before we get into that stretch. It allows for a much deeper, much more beneficial stretch.
Mm-hmm.
And then two, we use... PNF, like resist relax techniques, like proprioceptive neuromuscular facilitation is what PNF actually stands for. But that's going to be, you know, so I traction someone where let's say we're in a glute stretch. I'll traction them, you know, get that, you know, hip socket joint pulled out, stretched out. And then I'm just going to kind of tap on their leg. They're going to like put some force back into my hand.
Yep.
And then we're going to get that stretch into like a different range of motion.
Yeah.
Different. Yeah. So it's those two things. And then we also like, I know we were talking about before we started recording, breathing is a huge part of it.
Okay.
Just to be able to relax and to like breathe, to kind of deregulate that central nervous system. If they're not relaxed, if they're not breathing, you can feel it in their tissue.
Yeah.
So then that's a huge part of it, just to kind of get them to like pause. Match your breath with mine, and then all those things are going to work better.
Do you do a count with your breath, or just...
No, not so much. I try and, like, just match their breathing. A lot of times, if I'm not breathing well, I can tell they're not breathing well.
Interesting.
You know, like, bodies end up being pretty close during, like, a fascial stretch session. So, like, if I'm not breathing, if I'm stressed, I feel like I can often feel it in my client as well.
Yeah.
So, those kind of three things are what allow us to do something more than just... your average static stretch.
Yeah.
So.
That's so interesting because I was a sprinter in college at Cornerstone actually. And
all right.
I don't know where I picked this up, but at one point with like plantar fasciitis, which is for people listening, it's the bottom of your foot. You get that a lot when you're wearing spikes and you're sprinting.
Yeah.
So they told you, like, pull your big toe out and then stretch it back and then actually massage the bottom of it at the same time. And I would do that religiously, and it helped so much.
Huge. Yeah. It's the little stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have that right now. Dang, I should try that.
Yeah. Pop your shoe off.
It'll work on it for you.
That's interesting. Because, yeah, I think that's, like, that's often what people think of, right? Like, you hear fascia, like, oh, plantar, like, your foot, right? Or, like, plantar fasciitis. But, like, there's so much more that goes into that. That's crazy. I think, I mean, I've seen, even like I said, I've heard of one person who did this. And he would post, like, before and afters of just, like, a session and, like, squat depth and, like, something like that. Like, he'd, like, put someone in a position, like, and then you'd go for whatever the session is, half hour, throw them back out on the floor, and it just whoosh, like, this person folded up like a lawn chair.
People will stand up and be like, oh, my gosh. We said earlier, like, a couple inches taller.
Yeah.
And, like, you can really notice a lot of times we like to, like, stretch one side of the body and then have them get up and just, like, walk around. Mm-hmm. And people are just like, oh, my God. Like, like my whole left side is, like, way down here. It's interesting. You can tell there's patterns, like, people who are, you know, right-handed, you know, their right shoulder's always hiked. And there's definitely patterns that you're able to notice as you keep going through things. But, yeah, the whole squat depth thing is very interesting.
Okay.
Like, people move much better after an hour session. Mm-hmm. And, again, the more frequently they go through it, the more these changes and these patterns are lasting.
What's, like, recommended? Twice
a week? Yeah, I mean, we see a lot of people once a week. I feel like that's a pretty common thing.
Okay.
If you're looking to, like, perform at high levels, twice a week is great.
Okay.
Again, we kind of offer, like, packages. Like, you can buy a 5-pack or a 10-pack and then use them kind of however you want to use them.
Sure.
Or use them on, again, like, we have cupping or massage. So there's, I mean, a few different ways you can use your, you know, your 10-pack or whatever.
Sure.
But, it just kind of depends on the person, whether you're looking to run a fast cross-country time or just, you know, feel better after you sit in an office at a chair all day long.
Yeah.
And I feel like especially
wonderful.
With, you know, people being working at home and all that different stuff, I feel like it's been nice to, like, help people feel better. So.
Yeah. Now, have you guys been open this whole time?
No, we were closed for probably a couple months. I believe we opened kind of when the governor allowed, like, massage.
Okay.
And I think going forward, we're going to try and be labeled as a bit more of an essential service because we do really focus on people's health and well-being more than just, you know, basic, I feel okay. Like, we try and, like, really help people out. So
okay. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Hopefully that's the goal. Hopefully it doesn't happen again. But
yeah, no joke. that's interesting. I think for something like that, I'm trying to think how I want to say this. Do you like almost like, it's almost like therapeutic in a sense, like obviously physically, but like emotionally or mentally, do you guys have that kind of component? Is that more like, is that like throughout your whole organization or is that more just like specifically Alyssa, like you're going to kind of deep dive into the more mental side of it?
No, I definitely think that's a huge part of what we do or what most of our stretch therapists try to do. And again, we have 8 people on staff everyone kind of focuses on something different. Like again, I like to work a lot more with, like, younger athletes if I can.
Okay.
We have people who have backgrounds in more personal training, people who have backgrounds in, like, rehab, people who have backgrounds in dance, bodybuilding, personal training. We have just a kind of a wider range of people's different interests and specialties. So it's nice to be able to kind of match different clients with whoever we feel would fit their needs best.
Gotcha.
And yeah, I do. The mental side of it, the emotional side of it is massive, especially for those athletes.
Yeah.
So.
100%.
What does it feel like to piggyback on that when you're on the table and getting it done?
So great. No, yeah. So again, ideally what we'd like people to experience, our biggest thing is there's no pain.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of times when you self-stretch or have, like, someone else stretch you, there's, like, kind of that pinching feeling or, like, really strained feeling.
Yeah.
But again, with the techniques we use, traction and breathing, we really hope ideally there shouldn't be any pain. Like, obviously you're going to feel a stretch.
Yeah.
But a lot of times I'd rather have people leave my table saying, like, oh, I feel like she could have gone further or done more. But,
okay.
You know, so it's definitely our main thing is no pain. Mm-hmm. Ideally, we'd like to deregulate people's central nervous systems enough that they, could almost fall asleep during this.
Yeah.
So kind of similar to, like, a massage if you're just really relaxed.
Yeah.
That's kind of the goal. Like, a lot of times people are pretty guarded with their bodies, especially when you're, like, taking them into kind of new different ranges of motions. So it's hard to get some people to kind of like, you know, just let your body go.
Yeah.
It's hard to give up control. That's really the main thing we ask of people when they come in for their first session is just like, give up control of your body. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to move your leg. Don't move your leg. Mm-hmm. A lot of times we'll do some like circumduction. So I'll kind of come under your knee and kind of move your knee around mm-hmm. in a circle. And we'll kind of pause and see if people, you know, move the knee themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes they'll like keep the circle going, like, you know, no.
Yeah.
You need to stop that. Go. So yeah, just trying to get people to really relax and just like let us have control of their bodies. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a battle sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
People get better at it as they go, but
yeah, shake them a little bit, like
let go. Stop it. Yeah.
We're just so used to holding ourselves, right?
Especially a lot of athletes, like, you like to have control of what you do and how your body moves. Like you don't want somebody else touching it for you.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm.
Getting people used to that's been an interesting thing for mm-hmm. sure. And yeah, every session is different. Like we kind of have, obviously we like to kind of like, you know, left leg, right leg, left, you know, upper body, right upper body, head, neck. There's kind of a flow that we like to go through. But if someone comes in with specific issues or specific points of pain or pressure, we're obviously able to spend more time on those areas. Mm-hmm. So each session can be kind of different too. Not everyone kind of gets the same treatment, which is great. It's very personalized. I know there's a couple like larger stretch centers opening, not so much in Michigan, but more so in bigger cities, West Coast, East Coast,
mm-hmm.
That kind of go through like a very regimented, like formulaic way of stretching. That's definitely not what we go for.
Okay.
We go for a very personalized experience.
Sure.
So there's definitely a difference there.
Does that keep you guys, are you pretty busy over there on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, we have, right now we have four stretch rooms. We're not a you know, massive center. We have about four stretch rooms, eight therapists, and we're booked most of the time.
Okay.
We're looking to expand in the next probably half a year.
Okay.
We're going to kind of build out a little bit of a gym space, hopefully looking to add on some other services, kind of getting more into like the nutritional planning side
sure.
of things, maybe even some like genetic like DNA testing,
mm-hmm.
Some food sensitivity things.
Yeah.
So again, we're trying to look to be kind of a more like a one-stop shop than
That'd
we currently
awesome.
Are. So yeah, we're definitely looking to grow in the next year or so. Pretty excited about it. Things have been great. Like response has been great since COVID. We really opened pretty close to when COVID all started.
Okay.
So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's
not a fun time.
Stressful.
A little bit, yeah. Hasn't been fun. But yeah, it's been a good, we've seen some great response since then.
Do you still coach boxing as well?
I don't anymore.
Okay.
I've tried to learn to say no to certain things
uh-huh.
just for
good
quality
for
of life, for
mm-hmm.
quality of life purposes. I still love it. I think it's a great way to work out. Yeah, just one too many things in life.
Yeah, I can imagine. Now, what time do you, are you like early riser and then also stay up late because you're some miles?
Kind
or is
of.
It like how many hours you try to get
yeah.
out of sleep?
So
what time
I try,
you usually wake up?
I, that is one thing that's massive. I don't think I ever have realized how important sleep was until the last year. Maybe.
Okay.
I know we always kind of tell our kids that I coach that, you know, so there's this. I think this is funny, but there's this, you know, performance enhancing drug out there. It's not illegal yet.
Yeah.
You know, no one's banned it yet. MHSAA is still okay with it. It, you know, it'll help you perform better in school, help you have better focus when you take tests and exams.
Yeah.
It'll help you, you know, run better. It'll help your body digest food better. It'll help, you know, it'll improve your times. And then they'll be like, what is this? What is this drug? Like, it's just sleep.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
Put your phone down,
uh-huh.
you know. Get 8 hours. It's super important. So I've really tried to practice what I preach with that. Try and get 8 hours. So I try wake up at like, I don't know, 6 a.m.
Okay.
And then a lot of mornings, again, I'll head into Helix and stretch. I will try and get in my own workout, my own run, and then go and coach. Run with either like our boys or our girls there, depending on whether I need a harder workout in the evening
right.
or I need the easier one. It just depends. It's kind of a nice option to have.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, I mean, try and be in bed by 10 p.m. Try and get that 8 hours.
Yeah.
It doesn't always happen, but I feel like my body just responds so much better when I'm completely well rested and caught up. And then try and do a good job of drinking a ton of water too. But
yeah, because that's a big piece with fascia too, right? It's like 95% water.
Yeah.
Right? It's literally just like a water case for
yeah.
your muscle, like a sheath.
Yeah. So we say when we stretch, your fascia, one of the things we tell our clients when they leave is, like, make sure you go home and drink a lot of water. Because essentially when we stretch you like that, we're just kind of wringing out your fascia. Mm-hmm. So you need to be able to replenish that water. So that's something we definitely harp on with our clients. Like, go home, drink a lot of water today.
Gotcha.
Definitely.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
You have a gallon here?
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty close. Like a Tremor water bottle.
Yeah, she's huge.
It's like two a day or something?
Try and do two a day. Yeah. Yep. Two and a half. Again, especially when it's been hot out like it has this summer. Mm-hmm. Really try and drink a lot of water.
That's great. Yeah. Do you run better in the heat?
I don't actually.
Really?
Yeah, I'm much more of like a give me like the past couple days that we've had.
It's
been
nice, yeah.
Like low 60s. Yeah. Oh, it's been a dream. So, again, Michigan winter running is not fun either.
Of course.
But yeah, definitely give me that like 50, fall. 55 shorts and a long sleeve weather. It's just perfect.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, what is, I guess, for me, I love the weight room side of things as well. So, like, what does that look like for you?
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be right now, but I mean, like, when you're, like you said, when you're doing, like, heavier weeks and stuff like that, like, how, like, on top of 80 miles, like, what do you do, like, when you...
How do you get in the weight room?
Yeah, how do you get there, and, like, what do you do when you're there?
Yeah, so I definitely, I will, during off periods, like, after my last marathon in January, I tried to get in the weight room every day for a couple hours. I just kind of went really light on the running, and I tried to take, you know, 2 months of just, like, really... weight room focused.
Okay.
Training. I feel like a lot of distance runners overlook the strength piece of things. They just think, you know, miles. Mm-hmm. And that's just not, to me, I found weight training to be like way more beneficial.
Yeah.
Just because you're a distance runner doesn't mean you don't need to be, you know, strong and fast and explosive.
Right.
So yeah, a lot of times when I'm at higher mileage weeks, there's not a lot of weight room stuff going on.
Sure.
But I'm a big believer in just, to me, I feel a lot more confident when I can do, like, you know, some heavy squats every week, do a lot of stuff with bands, do a lot of stuff with TRX.
Okay.
Do a lot of, kind of like core stability work. And nothing super, I'm just confident when I can, like, do a heavy squat, but nothing super heavy.
Yeah.
Or just emphasis on a lot higher reps and...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
Just movement-based things.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're trying to match it to kind of, like, the pace of, like, your distance, right? So you're going to do, like, a long run, you're probably going to do more, like, higher, like, volume and repetition. Okay.
Yeah, yep.
Cool. That's
good to definitely know. A huge part that I think a lot of like endurance athletes can overlook sometimes. So
yeah, well, for me, I was always trying to piece that together in my head. Like, if you're doing X amount of miles, like, your legs are probably good. Obviously, like, an injury prevention piece would be like you do something in the weight room that would hopefully prevent any nagging issues. But like at that point, I was thinking, like, would you just only basically train upper body in the
or
weight
core,
room?
Core,
And I feel like a lot of times with lower bodies again. I feel like a lot of people think of running as just completely lower body, and there's definitely upper body pieces to
of course.
It. You know,
yeah.
You need to be able to, like, pull with your arms and not just, you know, have them
float.
When I get tired, I'll just be a bad, like, side-to-side runner, so I definitely need to get better with just being able to, like, pull with my arms and have some more upper body strength there. But, yeah, core work, I feel like a lot of times if you just do a lot of intense, if you just go out for a jog, it's not going to do that much for core work, but like for me it's whenever I do like hard, you know, stuff on the track, hard intervals, fartleks, I feel like that's almost my core work for the
day. Oh yeah, no, you're right.
You know? Mm-hmm. Like that's a lot. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I definitely do lift lower body. I enjoy it more than lifting upper body,
sure,
just because that's
of course.
Kind of my, like, that's my bread and butter more than upper body, but yeah, it's definitely been on that. Not a lot of lifting this summer just because gyms have been closed.
Yeah.
That's been a little hard. I've tried to find ways to get around it, but I'm just really focused on more running this summer.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe looking back to get in that weight room again starting this fall.
Sure,
miss it.
Yeah, okay, cool. Mm-hmm. Good to know.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you're training most of the time is going to be blanking on what plane this is.
From sagittal.
Sagittal plane, which is like front and back.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah,
that whole
not
lateral
side. No,
yeah.
Not so much. Yeah. Again, with if I was training for something a little shorter, maybe. But yeah, just a lot of forward movement. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever incorporate any like sprint work? Any like anything under like 100 meters?
Definitely.
Really?
Yeah.
I'd love to hear more about that.
Yeah. So this is something we do with our athletes that I coach as well. We generally more so in the summer.
Okay.
During the off seasons, but we like to have one. we always call it like Top Speed Tuesday.
Okay.
And again, it's people think that just because you're a distance runner, like, you know, you just need long miles and that's it. But like, we want to teach our kids and our bodies to move well. Mm-hmm. So if you just really focus on moving well, we do a lot of like, even like 30 meter accelerations. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of like little tiny banana hurdle work, mm-hmm. Just to work on like, you know, picking up those knees, mm-hmm. and that knee drive. Because if you don't know how to move well like that, you don't practice it often, how are you going to translate that into like your longer distance running? Mm-hmm. So the way to get better at, you know, longer distance running is, I mean, obviously lots of miles, but also just teaching your body to move well and practicing that. And that's, mm-hmm. something we definitely do better over shorter distances. So yeah. That's something we like to incorporate at least once a week. And then also after long runs or most other easy runs, we like to get in like 3 or 4 like hard, good, fast, like 100 meter strides.
Okay.
So yeah, I think we definitely believe in moving fast at some point every day.
Good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not just long, lopey,
yeah,
distance runs. Mm-hmm.
Well, because there's something we talk about all the time, just this concept called the speed reserve, right? So I, mm-hmm. liken it to like a NASCAR, for example. So like if your top speed is 300 miles an hour,
yeah,
it's a lot easier to go for 100 miles at 150, right? Yes. It's still fast.
Yes.
But so the way we kind of go about accomplishing that is like, so like, I mean, we have our sessions, like it's not like we have a ton of time to work with.
No.
Anywhere
never
from
enough.
Like 10 to 30 kids. So it's like, okay, like for the biggest bang for our buck is like, if we can get them as fast as possible, then like that, you know, that endurance almost kind of takes care of itself because their speed of play and everything else, right? Like, I mean, in most sports, you rarely ever, unless you are a sprinter, you'll never top out in speed.
Like all out.
Yeah, there's no room. And like a basketball court, there's like soccer, like you're using a ball, so you're not actually running as fast as you can. So
yeah.
It's like, for us, like, if we can just do some true, like, anywhere from, like, 20 to 40, 50, like, meter accelerations for someone young, like, they can typically top out around that distance.
Yeah.
We've had more success, like, even with, like, our soccer player girls who, like, they are midfielders, so they're running, like,
breaking out
miles. Yeah, like, they're
a
going,
ton.
But, like,
yeah.
They say, like, I don't really get tired. And, like and because, like, everyone's so used to, like, oh, like, go out, hit a 3-mile run. It's, like, that's great. But, like, does it really help performance for, like,
especially
a field sport?
Especially those sports,
yeah. Probably not.
No, you need that endurance, but, like, that's not your bread and butter.
Of course.
No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even with distance running, I found that that's hugely important.
Yeah.
So, just because we only run long doesn't mean that we don't have to move well and be fast.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think they had said, like, if you reverse engineer the fastest marathon runner who used to set the world record or whatever, like,
oh my gosh,
his 100-meter translates into, like, a 10-1 or something like that. So it's like, he's fast. He's not just
exactly.
good at endurance, like, you're also very fast.
Yeah,
like,
you're an athlete.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yep.
I don't think distance athletes get enough cred. Because I remember, like, when I was in college, even, like, I'd see, like, the cornerstone track, I'm like, oh, geez, like, they're those weirdos who just run for forever.
Yeah, definitely,
that's, like, every
definitely
school,
a group
right?
of weirdos.
Yeah, yeah, it's, like, it was, like, this, like, cult. It was, like,
it's
oh, it's a track team. Like,
yeah.
Get out, they got, like, their own, like, little tables.
That's
and, like,
where it is everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's definitely a
it's usually the biggest
thing.
Team.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
It's hard
I
to
mean,
relate to people because we're
these are insane. Yeah, you guys love to, like...
Mentally a little different.
Yeah.
Like, to her... Yeah, I always say, like, with, like, you know, distance running or sprinting or whatever, you know, the people who are best at it are the ones that know how to, like, make themselves hurt the most. So,
yep.
That's a special brain.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah, you'd always talk about how you throw up after every race. And
yeah.
Every 400-meter race. Yeah.
Well, 400s are
gosh.
400s are special.
Yeah.
That's about just an all-out sprint for a whole lap.
Yeah.
I would
about
never ask
a fun
that
race.
My worst enemy. Like,
yeah.
That sounds so terrible.
Yep.
Yeah, each race has their own special type of pain, but I feel like the 400, 800 right in the middle
yep.
there.
Yep, those
just,
are... Very
special.
Interesting on the body.
Yeah. Said lots of puking, lots of...
Even the 600 for indoor.
Yeah, yep. Good special
grief.
Events.
Yeah.
You guys are nuts.
But the best athletes, they'll finish their, like, Dave Radisha.
Yep.
He'll finish 800, and he's just standing there, like, what's up, guys?
Yeah, looks fine.
He is
yep, chilling. Looks totally... And just, also, you look how fast they're running, it just looks like they're kind of...
Floating.
Out for a jog.
Yeah.
I mean, not quite out for a jog, but, like, it doesn't look like they're straining. It doesn't
mm-hmm.
look like they're pulling. It just looks so pretty.
Yeah.
Yeah. Relaxed running's fast running, right?
Yeah.
So hard to teach people, too, especially because
yep.
you want to
don't
feel.
Don't bunch those fists.
Yeah.
And
you
want to
feel
grit
powerful.
Those teeth.
Yeah.
Yep. Let things go.
I'm sure their fascia is just
smooth. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just perfect. Just buttery smooth.
It is genetically sound fascia.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit of an advantage there.
Yeah. Well, any closing points that we want?
No, to? I think that was awesome. It's good. Definitely something I'm going to deep dive into after this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we'd love to have you guys both in for a stretch.
Yes.
Again, if anyone else is interested, you can come see me we're at Helix Center Grand Rapids. We're out in Cascade. Just call or, again, send me a message on Instagram or Facebook, whatever, to set up an appointment. We'd love to see you, love to show you what fascial stretch therapy is more about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, can you go ahead and give us your where we can find you on Facebook or Instagram?
Yeah.
We can link that in the show notes.
Yeah,
as well.
So again, we have our Instagram account is Helix Center GR. On Facebook, I think it's probably just Helix Center, mm-hmm. Grand Rapids, something like that. And then that's Helix spelled H-E-A-L-I-X. And then to contact me personally about anything running related, any questions, anything about fascial stretch therapy, my Instagram or Facebook name is just Alyssa, A-L-Y-S-S-A, and then last name is McElhenney, it's M-C-E-L-H-E-N-Y.
There's a reason why I didn't say your last name.
I'm
like, this is Alyssa.
McElhenney. Yeah, no, it never gets pronounced the same way twice, so I'll respond to anything.
Good.
Whatever you want to call me, Alyssa's great. So yeah, I'd love to answer your questions, love to see you for a stretch, love to talk more about running. Get in touch.
Yeah. Awesome.
Excellent.
I think that's a great place to stop.
Yeah.
Alyssa, thanks for coming out. This was fun.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem.
Thank you for listening to the Optimal Training Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a 5-star review and subscribe. Also, share with a friend you think would enjoy or learn something from today's episode. For more information on Optimal Performance Training Center, visit OPTCMI.com. Until next time, train optimally.